Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
We've never seen a fight where someone's landed this many strikes in a row and nothing else has happened on the other side.
He's got that wrist control now.
He's not. That'll do it, Love! The machine! Wally Schrelly!
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Saif Sayoud joins us today for the whole show, which is great. Yes. Thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys.
Good to see you, Saif. Yes. I'm sorry, what were you saying? No, you were saying something. We just were...
I mean, every time I see you, look leaner and leaner. You're going back in time. Look at this, guys. This guy's taking it all the way back to the welterweight. I mean,
it is. Oh, I thought you were talking to my little bird because he lost weight recently. You're talking to me.
Yeah, man. You look good, dude.
Thank you, Saif. I didn't have to bring that up. I really didn't.
Listen,
that's all right.
Hold on. Jim always looks good.
So thank you, Saif. I appreciate that.
He holds it steady all the time, so.
Thank you very much. I didn't want to say that, but I do appreciate it. I will accept it. What did you think of the, of course, I wanted to ask you of them taking a point from Menifield. Did you think that that was understandable? What did you think about that?
I mean, the thing was, in the situation, it made sense, but I just wish he would have gotten more of a warning. I feel like he didn't really get a warning. But that's to say, like, if you break a rule, do you really need a warning, you know? So it's kind of one of those things. I just felt like it really affected the fight.
Yeah.
You know, and the outcome of the fight obviously was a draw. You know, you got to give Crude a lot of credit. He came back. I mean, he was, you know, all heart there and came back. And it's just one of those. I mean, you can't say it was wrong because it wasn't wrong. I just wish there would have been a warning.
Refresh my memory. What was it again with this?
Jimmy Crute was going for a takedown. Alonzo grabbed the fence. Oh. But I guess it was a very blatant cage grab. Like, it was one of those ones where – was Mark Goddard was the ref, or was it Jason Herzog?
I think it was Mark Goddard.
He took a point immediately, like no warning, just walked him around and took the point.
You know what's rough about that one is, because with a dangerous, powerful striker like that, and when a guy puts – when he exerts a lot of energy – into trying to get a guy down. When they get the guy down, if they have good control the way Crute does and whatnot, possibly that's when they get a few seconds to rest. A little bit, just to be like, ooh, forgot that. But when you do, like, that's a failed takedown. And when you lift someone up and you go to, and they grab something, then now you don't got a chance to rest. Now they're waiting. It could really impact
the
fight. So it's one of those. It could be a strong warning, start them back in and that kind of thing. Or I saw something worse last week with who was it when he thought he gave a headbutt, or maybe he did, and he took away a point.
Yeah.
Bothering me now, but first of all,
I felt it was I didn't feel it was purposeful, but I felt it was blatant enough to warrant the point. And I remember you didn't.
I don't think he literally. Yeah. I think it was in the. I don't think he's sitting there like a Mark Coleman. I think it was one of them. You know what I mean? I don't think he was trying to use his head as a
Mark Coleman, baby.
Mark Coleman. Once they took headbutts out, Mark Coleman was screwed. Two things that really would affect Mark Coleman's legacy if it was around. is when he was younger, his prime, would be Yasada and the fucking headbutt rule. He'd be right. He'd never be a champion.
Let's talk about this. These younger fans, they've got to see Smashing Machine. If you haven't seen Smashing Machine with Kerr and Mark Coleman and that scene where he's sitting there with the belt in the locker room by himself, right, when he's won the Grand Prix and he's just taking all that emotion in, you know, I mean, that old school MMA, man, I love it. And, you know, we remember it. It doesn't seem that long ago to us, but hell, that was 15 years ago, maybe long 20. I don't know how long it's been.
The guys that fought and tried. Oh, I'm sorry, Saif. Go ahead. Keep going.
No, that's it. That's all I had to say. I just had that memory in my head. And, you know, you remember the scene.
How nice was it to see Jens Pulver get recognized and being brought into the Hall of Fame? And I guess it really took him off guard. It was very emotional watching him get so moved by it, like it was Aldo, I guess, a couple weeks before. It's nice to see that he's getting that recognition.
Jimmy, go ahead, Saif, and I want to say something after. Go ahead.
A couple things. I mean, you know, I was in Rio for Brandon's fight, and I saw Jose Aldo. He came to the back, and he gave Brandon a hug and stuff before. Such a nice guy. I couldn't think of a guy that deserves it more.
Right.
And then that moment for him to have in Rio was very special. But Jens, you know, I mean, we did the show not long ago, all of us. And I mean, I love Jens. He's just a ball of positivity. He's always complimenting everyone else and always telling everybody else how great they are. And for an old school guy like that, he was a bad motherfucker too. I mean, you watch those videos and the tape of him and how good his hands were and how fast he was. And for him to have that accolade, I mean, Hall of Fame is forever, man. That's the standard. So, big shout out. Congrats to Jens, an old school gangster.
Yeah.
He was the king back then. I mean, he was the lightweight, like back then it was lightweight. I think he would have been a lighter weight now. But when he fought BJ Penn at the Mohegan Sun ages ago, BJ Penn obviously went on to do great things and got him in a rematch. But, you know, Jens was the longtime champ, and people were picking against him because BJ was the prodigy and the next big thing. And he beat him, and he was like the underdog as the champ. And he fought him five rounds, and he beat BJ. And that was a big thing back then. A lot of people that are listening now should throw Jens Pulver, his name, into the UFC fight pass.
Yeah, little
was,
evil.
Yeah, it was evil. He had a great, great career. And it's been, you know, it's funny. Like I seen the video. It was so emotional with him when he found out.
Yeah.
And his son came in frame and they were hugging and crying. Jimmy, I don't know if you're thinking of Jimmy, you're a jerk.
Well, I thought it was beautiful. I loved Jens is such a nice guy. You can't not be happy for Jens.
This is the thing.
Yeah.
This is what I instantly thought of, and I felt like a piece of shit. I thought about when I was inducted into it. And I'm an emotional guy too. You know, my daughters the other day, just show you how emotional I am, and I'm not going to get too into it. Just on a weekend, they did a dance comp all weekend, and they did a duo together, and they won a special award. It really was good.
Oh, nice.
That's awesome.
That was so great. So I'm a very emotional guy. Jimmy knows. So when I got the call for the Jimmy, we made a joke about this one time. Because I remember when they called me, and then we played it on the show, and it was my response to being put into the Hall of Fame. And it was just, I was just like taken back a little, but like it didn't hit me yet. So like Dana told me, and I'm like, oh, I go, hey, honey. I told my wife, honey, I'm in the Hall of Fame. And then Jimmy's making fun. Like, hey, honey, I'm in the Hall of Fame. Can you bring down a sandwich? And like I was making light of it, which I wasn't. But I see all these other guys getting so emotional crying. I'm like, fuck, man. I feel like a piece of shit. I should have went back and I got hit by surprise.
Yeah.
You know, you late. You know, these guys are bawling their eyes out. And I'm like, fuck. I go, it meant a lot to me. I had my family there and shit, but I'm just like, hey, honey. I mean, I don't know. You'd have to really live it.
I think the thing is, Matt, with you,
yes.
I mean, a lot of people know you. You know, you have this show and you have a platform and everybody knows about the GSP fight, even though you never talk about it. Everybody knows. The biggest upset ever, everyone was saying Islam Volk. Everyone was like, I think Arrow was like, wait a minute, it's Sarah GSP. I mean, so people know you. I think with Jens, people kind of don't know who he is. I mean, there's so many new faces in the sport. There's so many young fans. They don't really know. And it's hard for guys like that to sit back and watch. And I mean, you know, he held the belt. He was the man. I mean, the number one guy at the lighter weights, and no one even knows who you are. And you know, I think that just him getting that acknowledgement, I think that's where all that emotion came out of. And I thought that that's really what it's about. So everyone is in a different place with their legacy. And
it's true.
And you take a guy like Cowboy Cerrone, he never won a title, but everyone's going to know Cowboy Cerrone until the day he dies, you know, that's by right. one name too. So it's a little bit different, you know?
And it's also, it was nice to see, and we do have Marab in the waiting room, but it was nice to see like Bisping, Dominic, those guys as ex-fighters went so far out of their way to speak highly of him and let anybody who's a new fight fan know this guy is a pioneer and he deserves this. Like this is a guy you may or may not know, but he absolutely is one of the, and what Dominic Cruz got like a little emotional and he's like a robot to watch him get caught up in it. You know, you never see Dominic Cruz like that. So it was really, really nice.
I think put a cap on it. It's just really awesome that we can share this history that we have. Matt is such a big part of it. All of us that were around in 2005, 2006, you know, now the UFC is so big. The sport's so big. I mean, it's just crazy. But back then it just wasn't, you know, and there wasn't as many fights. There wasn't as many pay-per-views and opportunities. So it's cool to see the respect given from the guys that are commentating now, the guys that are, you know, on top in the media, given that recognition all. And there's a ton of guys like Jens, man. We could go on and on and on. Matt could go on and on. Remember this guy, remember that guy. And I mean, it just never ends. And there's so many guys that fall short of that Hall of Fame status or a championship title. They never even get that accolade. So it was good to see that love being thrown out.
Speaking of future Hall of Famers, Marab, thanks for joining us.
Now it works. Now he hears us. Say it again.
Yes. Yes.
Say it again, Jimmy. Say it again.
Marab, can you hear us, buddy?
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Weren't sure if you got tested. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Jim?
Very good. How are you feeling about the Piotr Jan fight? And again, we've talked to you before. We're very, very happy for you that you're finally getting these fights that you deserve, these big fights. Guys have to deal with you now. Nobody wants to deal with you, and now they have to.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's for sure. It's a great fight. And really, I'm excited. Against former champion. This is amazing, of course.
Marab, I'm so happy to see you, Marab. Marab's been in Vegas getting ready for this. You know what I mean? And Marab, yeah, I gave you a message the other day on your little Instagram. You look like a beast, Marab. You're always a beast. But this is what I want to say because you're such a nice guy. With this Piotr Jan. Fuck this guy! Jim, you're a nice guy, but this is bigger. This is bigger. Listen, we know that life is pressure. We know fighting is pressure. It's fucking pressure. So I'm not putting more pressure on you. But this, did he freeze or is he just really? Oh no, he's okay. Good.
Yeah, he's driving.
Rob, concentrate on your driving as I go nuts.
No, I'm not driving actually.
He's a passenger.
I'm a passenger now.
Oh, is that your is that Jake the
Jake? Yeah, Jake.
Hey, what's up, bro?
What's up?
How you doing? Like to interview Jake. Good to see you, bro. Jake's good a good guy. Jake's one of the crew. So anyway, Marab, what does this? This is bigger than just your regular fight. I hate to say it, but I'm only saying it because I know you are up to the challenge. This is you have your whole country,
behind
you for this little. This bully, this little bully from Russia coming over. Oh, yeah, look at you. Listen, and I see it. I know that little interaction with you guys when he's like, oh, yeah, he's trying to test your muscles. And you're being polite. But they got to understand, all these Russians got to understand. Don't mistake niceness for fucking weakness, Marab. And you're bringing the fucking fire. You're bringing the fire, bro. Sorry.
No, man. Yeah.
I can't wait.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Yeah. This is not only just regular fight. This is bigger than fight, you know. It's fight. You know, like Russia has occupied my country and I have to fight for my people too, you know. It's like nothing personal. We want to know this is like Russia and Georgia, and this is fight. I have to fight hard. I have to win and make my people proud and my team and everybody else. We've been training hard, so and then we want to prove we are better than him. And this big opportunity. And then he's, yeah, he's good fighter, but he's stupid fighter. So we gotta make him. He was, he know rules, you know. And he, when he knee my friend Aljo to the to the head. So, and yeah, exactly. Like what you, sorry, you mentioned Matt too. When I met him in Abu Dhabi, he was like, yeah, he was disrespecting me. So
cocky, a little cocky.
Yeah, he is.
He's lost three. He's lost three out of four fights. So I'm wondering if he's trying to get his own confidence up, or present a strong front. Saif, what would you tell if you were Pyotr Yan's coach and you have a guy like Merab who just does everything well and never gets tired? What would you tell him? How would you tell Pyotr Yan to deal with a guy like Merab?
Jump the guard.
I gotta say. It was worth the price of admission just to watch Matt getting in his ass and get him all fucking riled up and get him going. Matt giving him that coaching all the way from New York, baby, building them from scratch. Let me say this. Everybody knows Merab's got a gas tank and the guy's a hammer, you know, and Matt has told me this. Ray Longo told me this as well about how Merab pushes and pushes and pushes. And we see it in his fights. I mean, he's got an unbreakable attitude and an unbreakable will. And he's going to have to use that gas tank and try to be physical with Pyotr Yan. I mean, Pyotr is known as being physical, but he's shown, as Aljo's shown, you know, he's shown he's susceptible to takedowns. He's susceptible to pace. But sometimes he shows up really, really sharp to defend the wrestling, and sometimes he doesn't. So I think that's really what it's going to come down to. And I'm sure Merab is very well equipped to handle it. Now that Matt has officially made it a political fight as well, Georgia versus Russia. I mean, there's a whole different angle there that I wasn't really thinking about, but that's true too.
Can I just throw in there that I feel, and I mean this, it's not that he's a better fighter than Aljo, but style-wise, I believe this is even a worse matchup for Pyotr Yan versus Merab than it is versus Aljo. I mean that style-wise. Now look, Merab's not going to stop coming after him. So if he also Merab's shown that he could take a shot that would knock other people dead and still come back and win a fight like he did with Marlon Moraes. You understand? You know, so I don't believe that Pyotr Yan fought anybody with the intensity that Merab has, because there's not a lot of guys that have that. And that's a skill in itself. The endurance. To go up and down, up and down, up and down. Dude, that's fucking insane. You know what I mean? And then there's guys like Jose Aldo, who are just experts with with the takedown defense. And they're hard. That one, Jose Aldo was probably the worst matchup in the whole division versus Merab. And Merab got it done with that former champion legend. So I'm just saying, and another thing, let me just add this really quick, is Pyotr Yan is getting comfortable. Now, hear me out. With making excuses for his losses. Oh, I'm going to leave. The UFC doesn't like me. I get that. Oh, you want to bib. You want to leave the fuck that shit. Stop crying. You got to get this shit done. Aljo beat you. Stop crying about that. You know what I mean? So anytime the guy loses, who else did he lose to that he was bitching
Sean
about?
O'Malley, split decision. Aljo, split decision and disqualification.
Oh, man. So what happens when Merab beats him? Oh, the UFC doesn't like me. I fuck that shit. You cocky little Russian.
Do you think, let me ask you guys, does it psychologically fuck with a fighter when you have fights like that, two split decisions in a row, and then you can convince yourself you won, but you actually lost at a disqualification? Does that do anything psychologically to a fighter that makes him either more dangerous or more likely to make a mistake, do you think?
I think more dangerous. For me, like when I have like... I lost my first two fights in UFC. It makes me motivated. And when I come back more smart. And because I leave judges' hand, and next time I make sure I take people down. I give them big hug and I beat them up and make sure like I don't leave judges' hand. So I'm sure he will come more strong, more smart. And actually, for this fight, I think he pushed for this fight. He asked UFC and Sean Sherby for this fight. I gotta win this fight. I gotta make him humble. And yeah, go from there.
How's John Wood doing? I know you're working a lot over at.
Yeah, he's good. He did surgery on his right shoulder, oh. And then he helped me pets first time with one hand, but yeah, otherwise yeah, it's good. You know, I've been training here with a lot of guys, a lot of buddies, which is good. You know, I have a lot of many training partners because a lot of guys come in here, UFCPI and other gyms like Syndicate, Exim, I've been sparring. You know, sparring and real challenging.
I'm gonna say, other than say George St. Pierre, who was a master at it, that John Danaher would call the art of the shoot box. That's basically what we call feet the floor, closing the distance and getting it down without getting knocked out or hit that much. Merab is up there with St. Pierre with that. As far as his timing, I see Merab and Longo has also go with guys who are better wrestlers and they do straight up wrestling. And the guy might do better than him.
Yes.
I remember this. This is a guy, I'm not going to name out the guy, but I remember Longo goes, now look, he goes, look, the other day he told me, this was during a sparring session. He goes, now he's going to spar with this wrestling kid. He goes, the other day they did wrestling. The kid was all over Merab. He goes, watch this. They put the gloves on. They go to spar. Merab, if you wouldn't believe it. It's a different MMA wrestling and the timing of the art of the striking to the shooting, to the clinch, to the takedown. It's a whole different thing. So it's like the same guy that gave Rob some problems or fits with just the straight up wrestling. We added in the strikes. The timing was just beautiful. And you wouldn't have believed it. The guy was taking extra time between rounds to get more. It was fucking great. You remember that? Yeah. So, I mean, listen, man, pack a lunch, Peter Yan. It's going to be a long night.
And how good is his cardio, Yan? Is he known to have cardio that's special, or is he's more than just average cardio?
He's went five rounds before. I mean, I think that sure. Merab was in the corner, right? Merab, you were in the corner for one of those fights with Aldo, yes?
Yes.
So Merab's had a close-up view at him and his gas tank. And really the big question is, Jim, back to what you said, is what is he going to do off that loss? Is he going to change his training up? Is he going to, was he happy with the Sean O'Malley fight? Did he feel like he performed at the level he should? Or is he going to, obviously needs to incorporate more wrestling. I think we know what Merab is about. I mean, we know he's going to punch, but we know he's going to wrestle. So what changes has Peter Yan made? And will he be the best version of himself, or will he be the same version? That's the real question.
Yeah, and Merab just said something about not wanting to leave it in the judge's hands. So that does make you more aggressive. But I also wonder, does it make you susceptible to making a mistake because you're afraid of it going to the judge's hands if you've dropped two straight split decisions? Could it have that little tinge of effect on you where you're afraid of leaving it to that and you wind up doing something you shouldn't do?
Yeah, look, leave the judge's hands. So, this fight will be, I realize, of course, this fight will be a tough fight. And now, I don't think we'll be one side, but we'll be war and we'll be fight of the night for sure. You know, now I'm going to show everyone my striking, not only wrestling. This fight will be a good fight and we'll be fight of the night, I believe. And we'll be people will enjoy watch this fight. You know, Peter always brings in, he always fights hard. And, last couple of fights, I try to keep it smart, but now this time, it's gonna be war, and I'm ready for this war. And I know maybe it can be a close fight, but I'm winning for sure. I'm gonna do everything for win. We all know he's even coming better in fourth round and fifth round, but I'm ready. I'm ready for it, and I'm gonna break him. You know, yes. Matt said, I'm gonna keep pushing, keep taking down, keep whatever, just throw punches and mix it up.
It's the main 11, the main event, March the 11th. Merab, look, we'll talk to you again, hopefully right before that fight. But if not, we'll talk to you right after. Hopefully you get another win. And good luck, buddy.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for giving us a few minutes. We appreciate it.
Have a good day, guys. Thank
all right, pal. Take care. Merab.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
And, you know, we've talked before about Merab and how I think a lot of guys wanted to avoid him if they could. And now that he's, I think he's third, there's so many good fights for him. You know, he hasn't fought Sanhagen. He hasn't fought Marlon Vera. He hasn't fought O'Malley. Like, there's a lot of interesting non-title fights for Merab now. So he's got a good run ahead of him if he gets through this fight.
Can I add that if you look at his career in the UFC, he literally could be undefeated. Yeah, that first that fight, and listen, that Frankie Saenz was a nice kid, and very nice kid, very good wrestler. He didn't win that fight. I don't give a fuck. I mean, I'm not that. I won't watch the fight. Tell me the guy won. I think Merab beat the record for takedowns in that fight, but and Merab was coming off a fucking flu, but he won that fucking fight. But you know, they gave him an L. But you could easily give that to Merab. And then there was the fight with Ricky Simon, where at the bell, like Merab was like, yeah. Like in and out of consciousness, and they fucking, but yeah. He made it to the bell. The ref didn't break it up. So it's a lesson. It's controversy there. So it's not like, all right, he's got the two L's by a knockout and a fucking, he went to sleep and he did it. I don't know, man. You can make a case for this guy being undefeated in there. So
let me say something.
At an all time high.
Dude, Matt is such a fucking coach. I mean, he has just been going on. He got all the accolades. Now he's giving me fight history. He's giving me every little detail. You know, that's why I like doing the shows, because I see the coach in you and all the love and the fire that you have. And that's why we connect, man. And I know how much you care. So
it's hard not to, you know, a guy like Merab, it's even more so, you know what I mean? It's even more so. And I like that. You know what I liked? And I know we're going to get into the fights now.
Sure.
With Volkanovski, I love how that team is so tight, that City Boxing, you know, you saw his friends in the audience, like the other fighters from Israel, the Dan Hooker and all them, supporting their guys. Can we delve into that fight real quick? Because what a fucking fight, huh? What are you guys' thoughts on the fight? And then I'll tell you more.
I did the UFC breakdown for it, and I looked at all the angles, and you know, I thought it was going to be a very competitive fight. I thought Volk was going to find a way to be competitive in the grappling, because he's just such a winner and he's such a competitor. And people were kind of talking shit like, oh, no, he's going to get taken down. It's going to be over this, that. It's like, man, we're always so quick to discredit people. And Volkanovski showed what determination and hard work and setting the bar as high as you can is. And I mean, look, the guy lost the fight, but he won the world in a lot of ways. And to piggyback off that, I feel bad for Islam. Islam fought a beautiful fight. Islam showed a side. He outstruck Volkanovski with the significant strikes landed, to me, the ones I was watching. As far as, you know, every time he would hit Volk would acknowledge him, like, damn, man, you tricked me, man, that was a good shot. Islam was sliding around on the outside, and he was landing on Volk, and I've never seen Volk not be able to solve a puzzle, but he wasn't expecting the striking to be so diverse and the movement to be what it was. And so it was awesome to see that out of Islam. And then again, it was awesome to see how extraordinary Volk was in the later rounds, his will, just everything, the energy, the whole fight. It made me happy to see both of them shine, because they both deserve it. It just disappoints me that Islam is getting kind of shit on, right? Everyone's like, oh, you suck, you're not the pound for pound, like, fuck, Islam sucks. It's like, dude, he just fought the guy that was the best fighter in the world, the pound for pound number one. he took a risk. I mean, I don't care what you say. He took a risk and early in his championship campaign. And I think he deserves a lot of credit because he didn't win the way that we thought he was going to win. Right. So I think they both come out of that 20 points higher in their legacy and their status and the respect level they should be shown. I just wish it was across the board. Volk's definitely getting it, but Islam deserves it as well.
Say, let me ask you too, because I felt the same way. Like I thought like Makhachev threw a lot more significant strikes, but then, and again, the numbers don't always tell the tale as you saw it, but they're saying that Volkanovski had him 164 to 95. I'm sorry, in 70 to 57 in significant, and only thing that Makhachev...
They could have counted those ground and pound strikes in the last minute. They might have racked up 20 or 30 or 40 of those and counted those as significant. You know, it's like you said, Jim, you can't look. We know what the fuck we're talking about. Okay. And this thing about everybody being an expert and this and that, we've been doing this shit since the beginning, you know, and everyone that watched that fight, you know, I think most people had it scored for Islam. And I think it was a very close fight. I think Volkanovski close the distance, but I think the striking and the cage control from Islam was enough. You know, the fourth round, he had the body triangle. I just thought it was enough. I thought it was 3-2. Yeah. Either way, you could say Volkanovski won the fight. Volkanovski did fantastic, but I think that was more people so shocked of how he did, number one, so shocked that he hung on the ground that they start kind of changing. It's different to say, wow, he did great, versus, hey, he won. And I think that got kind of lost in translation a little bit. And then I think then people get mad at the winner and start shitting on him when it's like, can't we just celebrate both guys? Can we fucking stop being so negative as an MMA fan base and a culture? Can we fucking stop it already? Can we just celebrate both guys being great? I mean, that was a win for everybody. It was historic. Everybody should be celebrated coming out of that situation. But and that's really how I see it.
Those city kickboxing guys love to try to go up in weight and take the next belt. Like there really is a risk-taking attitude there, like with Adesanya fighting Blachowicz, going up in weight and taking his first loss doing that by decision. And then Volkanovski, how many fights in a row he had won? I think he had only lost one fight up until that point, taking a huge risk going up to fight Makhachev. Yeah, that was such a great fight. But I agree. I think Islam won 3-2.
I thought he won 3-2. Yeah, I thought so.
They got huge nuts, mate. Anyway, my thing is this, Jimmy. Islam, I felt won if you go for a bum round the round. I even went back and watched that first round.
Yeah.
And you could say, now this is the thing, they both hurt each other with a punch. If Volkanovski hurt him with the punch, and let's say Islam still got the takedown, but didn't really do much with it besides the back take, and he's doing the old shaka, maybe give that round to Volk. But because before that, they both landed some good shots.
Yep.
They both landed one shot that they both felt.
Yep.
And then you add in.
He dropped him too. Yes. He dropped Volk. And so, I mean, you can't lie. Like as much as you want to root for the underdog and Volk and the whole experience, when you go back and you watch it, he dropped Volk and then he had the control. So there's one. He got the body triangle and held that whole thing in the fourth. I mean, those are two rounds right there. So it's like you got to find three rounds in the next that Volk won out of those other three. And I just don't see it. I think 3 and 5, he definitely won. He finished strong, which is a huge piece of what we do. Finished strong, looked great. And Islam was like, hey, I'm chilling right here. I don't want to take a risk. It was an awesome thing for both. I was so happy to see both sides represent so well. And I think that's really what we take from it. I mean, I think they both deserve massive respect. Like Sarah said, huge balls on both these guys for doing that. I mean, they really went for it.
Let me add something in here. And now this is a little bit more of me just kind of sticking up for my art. I love jujitsu. Now listen, I'm wearing I Love Jujitsu if anybody's listening. I just showed it on screen. Now listen, there's always that shirt that the Dagestani guys love to wear. If Sambo was easy, it'd be called jiu-jitsu. Okay, very funny. Very funny. My thing is this. Volkanovski is getting ready for this biggest fight of his life, one of the best MMA grapplers on the planet. He just
Craig Jones.
He's working with Craig Jones.
Craig Jones.
From the B team. Craig Jones is arguably number two in the world. He's up there. You know, he Gordon Ryan is the best in the submission game, in the jiu-jitsu game right now, no gi. But Craig Jones is up there. So good. So my thing is this, you know, if let's say Volkanovski worked with a world-class Sambo guy, because he's fighting a Sambo guy, that's not going to do the same thing. Sambo, although has a great offensive onslaught of techniques, you know, they're very aggressive with their wrestling. They don't like being on bottom. They like being on top, and they're very good positional. Jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, man, your defense. The defense in jiu-jitsu is night and day. I mean, it's basically survive the fight first when you want to get right down to it, and then you survive, and then you finish if you want to go into philosophy of the jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So he made the right choice by getting a jiu-jitsu expert to help him in his fight instead of Graham and Sambo Sid to come down with the shorts on and gi. No, it's not happening. He got Sambo. The right guy for the job.
Sambo Sid?
I don't know. Listen, he got the right guy for the job. Craig Jones deserves a lot of credit, man.
I'll piggyback off of what Matt said, and Volk said it too. Man, when he goes back to featherweight, because he's got all these new skills. Here he's training with guys that are bigger than him, stronger than him, and he showed he was strong. He showed he was strong as hell at lightweight against a very strong lightweight. All that stuff he was saying about, I'm strong, man. I'm ready. I'm physical. I'm explosive. It all was true. So he's going to be even that much more physical and explosive when he goes back to featherweight.
Did you see in the corner, I think it was after round one, when they said something to Volkanovski, and he went, he's not strong. Like, which again, I'm sure Makhachev is strong, but he didn't seem to be too worried about Islam's strength.
Good point. 100%. You're right, Jim.
And I've mentioned this before the fight, even though I'll take this one on the chin happily, you know, where I thought, Islam, I'm so impressed in all his prior fights with his takedown ability and his control, submitting guys bigger and powerful than Volkanovski. I mean, arguably is like Drew Dober is a beast.
Yeah.
Take these guys down. Kimura in this one, he's getting Dan Hooker, Volkanovski could probably run between his legs. The guy's so tall. I mean, he got him down. He got him in a Kimura in the first round. Yeah. You like that, Jimmy? That's how I fight him. He's nuts as a speed bag. Anyway, my thing is this, Jimmy. You ever see that episode of Gilligan when he was running through the giant's legs?
No, but I hate Gilligan.
Jimmy.
Hate him.
Okay. I grew up on that. And me I too. Used to have fantasies of Ginger and Marianne.
Yeah. I always wanted to fuck Mrs. Howell.
I thought you were going to say Mr. Howell. So okay. No. Listen. So where was I? Bring me back, please.
You were talking about fighting Dan Hooker and how tall Dan Hooker is compared to Volkanovski.
So out of all my fights, it might surprise you, Jimmy, I only fought one gentleman that was shorter than me, to your surprise. Okay? That was
Ivan Menjadar. Ivan Menjadar.
He was tall. Ivan was great. He was so great. And he was shorter than me. And I remember being on top of him in half guard about to pass, and all of a sudden, boom, he jumps to his feet, and I got like a seatbelt with him. Like, he was very good at getting to his feet.
Yep.
I won the fight, Jimmy. But that's the point is,
I had no doubt.
I got his back trying to choke him. He had no neck. And he was hitting me going, sorry. He was a very nice guy. But so I know what it's like, and I said this before. I'm like, that might pose a problem when you're fighting a smaller guy. The limbs are smaller, man.
Yep.
Sometimes I wanna challenge myself. I'll jump on like one of the smaller people in the school, or even like if I'm rolling with one of the girls who's smaller than me, like I try to get her in just arm locks without using, because they got these little arms, and you know what I mean. So you got to try to play really tight to them, and I don't know. But all I know is Volkanovski, man, you could make a case that he won the fight. I felt he lost it. Because if you go round the round, he did lose. If we talked about pride earlier, if it was a different criteria for ruling, where in pride, it doesn't matter how you start, it's how you finish. They rule it like a street fight. So they would have gave it to him for sure, because he ended strong. And that's but it isn't pride. It's the UFC. Round by round, I believe he lost, the rounds. You know, even though he's Got to give him that fucking fifth round, though. Holy shit, that was, and that's what really got everybody on their feet. Like, oh,
yeah,
it was amazing how active he was too on his back, just throwing punches back. And when you looked at his face, he didn't look concerned. Like, it was crazy to have to be wrapped up by Islam, and he did not look concerned. And he had said he was unchokable. I guess after the Ortega fight, he goes, "I feel like I'm unchokable," and I think he really believed that because he didn't seem to be concerned. There was no panic. He handled that really well, even when he was in those bad positions in the fourth.
I seen him only because I've been practicing it a lot lately. Because you listen, safe knows you never, as a martial artist, especially nowadays, you never stop adding to the arsenal. You know,
no.
So lately I've been practicing my hand assist method when somebody's got a body triangle on me. I used to be such a barrel, they couldn't get those legs as a triangle, so I used to not worry about it. But now there's ways to get rid of that body triangle. And I seen him trying to do it. I seen Volk trying to get the leg that's on top between his legs. And I was shocked. I'm like, it's very, if you know what you're looking for, you'd be like, oh, wow, he's trying to do the proper escape. So that wasn't just him, all right, I have no neck, I'm a short guy, I'm just going to go like this, like a turtle in a shell. He was looking to do the proper escapes. Again, he's going with one of the best in the world with control. It goes back to his training for this thing. Look at the size of Craig Jones. Craig Jones is a big fucking dude.
That's what I'm saying. And to piggyback off of that, off of Matt, what Matt said, I mean, you think Islam doesn't have a variety of short chokes, rake in the face, all kinds of little tricks. And he was trying to position himself, as you saw in the back, putting his head and switching his arms. And Volk was wise to all of it, man. And there's a lot to be said for that, because like Matt alluded to earlier, Dan Hooker hadn't been submitted like that. You know, Drew Dober, these guys, I mean, they got taken down and I mean, they just got destroyed.
He
manhandled them, and it wasn't even close. Bobby Green as well. You know, he took Bobby Green down and it was over. I mean, he ran over him. So these are guys that have fought in the UFC that are tough guys that are top 15 to top 25 all the time, right? Like, these are guys that have been in the top, have been ranked, and they're tough. They're guys, they're career guys. And the way Islam ran over them at 55 is what gave everybody, you know, there's no way that a smaller guy, but again, everybody discounted the will and the heart of Volkanovski, the will to be great, right? The will to be better than everybody else. And he was very disappointed in the cage, and you could see it in his emotion. It wasn't that he thought he won per se, because in the moment, I think he might've agreed with what we're saying. I saw that he tweeted and said he thought he had won, but he wasn't like, that's bullshit, I won. He was just disappointed that he didn't achieve his goal. You could see what kind of a winner he was. He was really, truly disheartened that he did not achieve that goal. He expected to win that fight. I mean, you could see it in the end too. Sometimes, you know, I'm getting ready to do John Jones's breakdown, and I just looked at the Dom Reyes John Jones fight, and everybody says, you know, how Dom Reyes won and how he won. But Dom Reyes survived those last couple rounds as John really put the heat on him. And after the fight was over, Dom didn't do much in the fifth, but he was just so happy he had made it to the end of the fight. You could see that in people sometimes. They're satisfied with making it to the end with the great, right? And it's understandable. Alex was not satisfied. He was truly disappointed that he didn't win that fight. And it shows you, it's a look in the mindset of greatness and the expectation. And I don't think he's going to take that as a charity win, like, oh, well, I showed everybody. I think he's going to be truly disappointed. I think it's a mark he really thought he was going to hit that he missed. And I think he's going to go try that something like that again before he retires to try to take another stab at that accomplishment.
He's not looking for a moral victory. He's not looking for a moral victory. He wants the win.
He wants the win. He wants that greatness, and he's driven by that. And his work ethic, if he can get that much better, you know, to what Matt's point was, there's no way he can get that much better in a short period of time, right? Where he could stop someone like Islam. Well, he obviously showed he could. And now that he knows how to train that way, he's going to be fucking using that as an offense, taking people down, beating them up. Who knows what other things he's going to be utilizing? Because if he's that strong and that physical and his grappling's gotten that much better, look out, featherweights. I mean, look out.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
And there's two more fights I think we should cover. One of them you just mentioned. I would like to ask your opinion on Gane against Jones, because Jones hasn't fought in 3 years. What do you expect out of this? And I think Gane is a tougher fight for him than even a guy like Stipe would be, just because of the movement. But do you think Stipe would be?
You nailed it. You nailed it, Jim. The reality is no one's talking about. Gane is a giant version in a lot of ways of John. He throws the front teep to the knee, right? Those stabbing teeps to the knee. He's awesome and brilliant in the clinch with the knees and the elbows off the break. John is the master of elbows. I mean, he is the guy, you know, that really, you know, orchestrated him in a level we had not seen. The spinning kicks, the jump kicks, the flying knees, they both do the same thing. They both fight ambidextrously. And the real question here is Cyril is finally fighting someone longer than him. You know, I think he's 81 or something like that. 6'5".
84,
Giant guy. John is 84 and a half. So Cyril doesn't have the length advantage that he usually enjoys in this matchup. Can he utilize the speed and the movement to get to John? And the big question is, can John, conversely, is he strong enough at heavyweight to manhandle a guy like Cyril? We haven't seen John in such a long time. We don't know what he looks like. We don't know what his strength level is. And we don't know what his ability to execute at that body size and that body mass is. So real interesting, real intriguing matchup. I can't wait to see it.
Could you guys name me a fighter that took down double champ DC? John fucking Jones.
John Jones did it, Jimmy.
Yeah. John Jones took down DC. DC, if you remember, they called him the champ for a reason.
Yeah.
He's the fighter fucking heavyweight. And look at his wrestling credentials.
Yeah.
This is the thing that I'm screaming from a mountaintop. John Jones is going to make this off. I know it's an MMA match. Look at his fight with Quentin Jackson. And one round ended when he shot in for a double, had his hand on the head underneath the crotch, like threw him over the shoulder. John Jones can do amazing things. So John Jones, look at the second fight with him and the Swedish
Alexander Gustafsson.
Look at that second fight when he added in a nice well-timed takedown. If he makes this a grappling match, which I believe that should be the game plan, he is gonna strangle him. That's what I feel. I feel it in my bones, no pun intended.
The thing about it is, and you know, you cannot deny it, John's, you know, JUCO national champion. He's got the grappling credentials, but he also is well-rounded, you know. I mean, when he strangled Machida, I mean, he'll find the neck. He'll find these positions because of the leverage and the length. Exactly. And also the leg length on the hooks. The leg length on the hooks and the leverage points that John creates on the ground is different from almost anybody else because he's so long, but yet he's strong, right? You got a guy like Volkov. He's a striker. He's not a wrestler. That length, we never seen that kind of length in that level of a wrestler. And I think that that's really what it comes down to. Can he throw those long legs in? You know, get that half Nelson control, and can he just pound away on Cyril? I mean, it's a real possibility. It really is.
Do you think they fight? Do you think that Jones pushes the action, trying to cut the cage a little bit to keep Cyril from moving around? Who do you see pushing it?
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely going to have to, you know, push the pace on him. You know, if you watch his fights, he likes to dictate, cut off the cage. He'll switch stances. He can be very, very aggressive, John. He can also counter strike. He's got an unbelievable fight IQ. I mean, it's got to be one of the, you know, the best fight IQs that we've ever seen inside the octagon, along with the physical gifts. And I mean, he just adjusts as the fight goes on. But I think Matt said it, you know, I mean, look, we cannot not talk about Francis manhandling Cyril. I mean, Francis manhandled Cyril in those spots. And, you know, John's studying that tape, you know, he saw it, you know, he's going to try to take him there in the later rounds if it goes there. And Francis is huge and a badass dude, but he's not John Jones as far as the grappling creds go. That was kind of the first time we saw Francis employ that strategy, and he did it successfully. But, you know, this is a much lower tier of grappling skill than we see with John Jones. So if Cyril couldn't stop that, you know, I mean, and John has the strength now that we see, that's the only X factor, is he's strong enough, which he probably is. I mean, the guy's been getting big for a long time. He teased about this 10 years ago. So, you know, he's definitely, Cyril cannot allow him to take him down and start, you know, posting and landing those elbows and that ground and pound, because it's devastating.
You know, we talk about, you know, the physical aspects and what tools they have. That's smart that you brought up the fight IQ. Let's talk of lack of it. Let's talk about getting to the fifth round, getting exactly where you need to be, and then making a big mistake by laying down with a leg. Now, you could say, well, yeah, you had a good chance of getting that heel hook. How many times unless he's literally ripping legs off every week in practice, I want to know if he's, because I know he got it before in a match. He sat back with a leg and got it.
But you're right. Fifth round. I mean you bring it up. I mean, Matt, you bring it up, and it's a great point and a very, very important point that will also tie into the fact that he only has 10 fights. You know, now here he is trying to fight the greatest of all time. This guy's got 16. This is his 16th championship fight, I think. You think he's got 15, 16 fights. This guy's got more championship fights than Cyril has fights. So, I mean, like, you're talking about, this is a big deal. And, you know, Matt's not wrong. You know, I mean, if the guy went for a leg, if he stays on top, who knows, maybe he wins that title. But we've got to look at the grappling exchanges. We have to look at, you know, where he made mistakes and where he was weak in that fight. That fight was not long ago. Ty did not pose that threat, but we don't know if he's cleaned that up. And he's going to have to clean it up dramatically when he's fighting, you know, one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Fight IQ, that's how it happens, man. I mean, you know how many back fists I had to take before I smartened up with some shit? Like, sometimes you learn by just, like, I guarantee. I mean, if Cyril Gunn is on top of somebody again, I'd be very shocked if he lay down with that leg again.
You're right. You're right.
Is Cyril Gunn a southpaw?
He listed as an orthodox, but he fights southpaw, and you bring up another good point. These guys are ambidextrous, man. You know, I've been watching film on them for the last, you know, freaking 3 weeks, and these guys are ambidextrous. They both fight both sides. They're very good at touching and tapping and getting the distance management. They get their distance, then they kick, right? They set their whole offensive attacks and techniques up off of kicks, using the range and finding the range, and they're both very elusive. I mean, John is very good at not getting hit either. That's why when he gets cracked, everyone's like, oh wow, he took a big shot, because we haven't ever really seen John, you know, get dropped or get hurt. He's very good at rolling with the shots, switching sides, moving, grabbing, crashing in and clinching. So they really are both good at the same things on the feet, but it's the grappling exchanges that really is going to tell us, you know, where this fight goes and John's experience there. I mean, we're definitely going to be in for a very interesting night. And I think we'll be able to tell, after the first grappling exchange. You know, if he gets Cyril down and Cyril can't get up, then
yeah.
Can I throw in there before it gets too late? We have a new featherweight interim title holder in Yair Rodriguez taking out Josh Emmett with a beautiful triangle. I love jiu-jitsu. I just come on, man. That was so cool.
It was.
What I love about just the submissions, because Josh Emmett, you're hitting that guy with a bat, he's coming after you. You know what I mean? You stop that blood flow to the brain, you got to say uncle. And Yair Rodriguez, man, what a fun fight. Because he was crafty. He's on the outside.
Incredible.
His kicks, he's using his kicks. Once in a while, Josh Emmett would come through with a haymaker. Some of them would just miss him. And you're like, if that lands, that's a problem. So it was one of those edge of your seat fights. It wasn't the longest fight, but it was. Well, was that the second round or the first round?
Second.
But it was very edge of your seat. You knew it wasn't going by.
It's 100%. And you know, it's funny because when I look at Yair's progression from the Frankie Edgar fight. When he got taken down over and over again, controlled, he couldn't get up. And Frankie, you know, is not a big guy. So now these fights later, for him to get with a tank, Josh Emmett is a tank of a man, right? For him to handle the physicality, be that aggressive on the feet. He was so aggressive on the feet, Yair. I mean, with the kicks and the attacks. And he kept switching and going. I mean, he wasn't sitting back like, I don't want to get taken down. I don't want to get hit. He was just going. He was dealing with adversity while attacking the whole time. And then you just saw him when he hit the ground. He was hitting him with the hammer fist and the elbows. And he was looking for the triangle at the end of the first round to lock on. And then he was hitting him with that position. And he was so confident on the ground when he got hit. He was just like grabbing. He was just looking for it. I mean, Michael Bisping called it out. He's like, he's got to watch out for the triangles. Bisping saw it, you know, well before. And then for you to get triangled like that on top, Matt knows this. It's not easy to do that at that level in the UFC in the second round. Like, he had hurt Josh so bad with the stand-up and the kicks, and then he would load up and hit him after he would kick him, and then Josh would come in, and he would punch him while he was coming in. He had him so damaged that he was so worn out. I mean, it was done. That was a tight triangle. Game over. I mean, it was impressive.
Plus, he was winning on bottom from the strikes. Yep. You can arguably say that even though he got on top of Yair was striking with elbows and punching from the bottom. Those elbows, every time I see that, I cringe, man. When I fought GSP, and I said this before, he took me down. One of the things was when he keeps his head tight, I'm like, man, I never really used my elbows like this. I'm going to push up and I'm going to fucking get him. I remember I did that. I told you this before, Jimmy. I pushed up his head. I fucking got him. My ulnar nerve, fucking done. My arm felt like it was, I couldn't even feel my extreme dead hand. If I like lean on it too much or something, my ulnar nerve, I get the weird tinglies really quick. But anyway, I got little thump. I got like dull elbows. I don't got no Kenny Florian or Yair Rodriguez elbows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish you could show
elbows. His elbows were, I mean, he was so confident and calm. And that goes to the next thing, you know, him in bulk. I mean, man,
in Mexico,
that is,
he wants to do it.
That is, and you know, two Mexican champions. Two Mexican champions, and our guy Brandon Moreno, God bless him. You got to love that kid.
Yeah.
And now Yair, I mean, man, you got Brandon undisputed now. Yair an interim, and Mexico, man, Mexico MMA. Shout out to Mike Valley. He is a great coach. He was Yair's striking coach for this fight. I think he deserves a lot of credit. He's a little bit of an unheralded guy, but you saw the brilliance.
Is that Frankie's cousin or no?
I don't think so.
Valley? Oh, what a night.
No,
late December back in 63. I'm safe. I feel comfortable with you now. So I can sing to you.
Let it all out, Matt.
Thank you. Jimmy always leaves when I sing. Sorry about that Frankie Valley reference. That's for any old school.
Yeah, I think that's Italian and Mexican. I think we're getting the crossover here, but maybe there's a distant relative there somewhere.
Hey. Is there any time? I'm sorry, Matt. Is there any time frame on Moreno Pantoja?
You know, there isn't. I mean, we know that. You know, we've spoken about this. We know Pantoja's, you know, next. He deserves the shot. But you know, if the Brandon's down, man, Brandon's down to do it in Vegas. And Brandon's down to do it in Mexico City. So Brandon is a yes, sir, point me in that direction type of guy, man. I mean, he's just, he never runs from a challenge. And I mean, I think he looks forward to those challenges, and I think they make him better. And I think you saw that in the Figgy fight. I mean, I feel like Brandon is really kind of coming to his own at 29 to 30 years old now. That's kind of like when you really start to grow up. And I just feel like that he's really maturing as an athlete. So that's going to be a challenge. Pantoja is a great fighter, you know, and I know they have history, but I don't think Brandon is that guy anymore. And I think we saw that change in the last fight. You know, him and Figgy had three close fights. The last fight wasn't close at all. I mean, Brandon controlled it from start to finish using his intelligence and his discipline. And I think we're going to see more of that from him.
I was thinking about Brandon the other day because I brought my kids to the old Roosevelt Field Mall, and my youngest now is super into Legos. Now, I know there's parents listening, and in this age of iPads, and my kids are, they're roadblocks and they're this and that. They're always fucking Legos. I never played as a kid. And I know Brandon still plays. A lot of adults like it too. What a great toy for kids. Like, because Jimmy, I know you want to, Jimmy, listen, this
past, I loved Lego when I was a kid.
I never played as a kid. Maybe
it's fun.
Well, I probably couldn't put it together. But the point is,
come on,
my youngest, like, I'm looking at the stuff she's building. She looks at a little thing and I go, what the, that must be from your no-no. Her grandfather, because he could build a fucking house out of fucking anything. I mean, I can't hang a nail. My wife's the handyman here. But my point is this. What a great boy for kids. Because it gets them building. They look at the little thing, and they're not on the computer. They're building. I go, you built that? I'm looking at that.
But that's what I'm saying. Brandon, people like, oh, he's a kid, and oh, Legos, and this and that. And I've said this before, Brandon's an analyst. I mean, and you know this, you can't be an analyst in MMA, real-time analyst, and not be sharp as a whip. He's a champion now, a multiple-time champion, an undisputed champion. The kid is very, very smart. And I think he kind of has that quiet, polite demeanor. He's very respecting and nice, but he's a fucking lion. And on the inside, I mean, I see that in him, and I love that about him. He's got a balance there in life as a father and a family man. But man, when you get him in those rounds, and I mean, I've got the shirt on right here. I got to give a shout out to my guy Capitillo Boxing in Vegas. This is Brandon's boxing coach. But I mean, the amount of grind that these guys were doing in camp, you know, the boxing rounds, the rounds we were doing at the PI. I mean, I'm talking about, we were going to war, and it wasn't perfect. We had all kinds of issues and injuries. And I saw Brandon walk through the fire, man, over and over again. And Matt knows this. To be a champion, you got to have that grit and tenacity. So I think that all the other stuff, the sweet stuff, I think it's just his balance, man. And I find that to be pretty awesome that he's a balanced guy. And I think that fighters need that balance, right? I mean, they need to find a balance. They need to find other things that complete them. And it can't just be focused on MMA. But I think it shows a little bit of the genius there. And we're seeing that with guys in the commentating and all the rest. There's a lot of smart people in this sport. And I love the fact that people are starting to recognize that.
Shit, yeah, man.
Yeah.
And by the way, Jack Della Maddalena, I'll tell you right now, he answered the call versus Randy Brown. You know, yeah, Randy Brown, I see him every Tuesday night at Sarah BJJ. He trains with my buddy Nardu Deborah over from Budokan here in Long Island. He's from Brooklyn, hometown guy. Dangerous guy. He was wearing sunglasses at the press conference.
Randy Brown?
I'm just saying, Randy.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bright in there.
Yeah.
Isn't he asking for asking for Vicente Luque, isn't he? Isn't he saying he wants Vicente?
What is Save Lamb? What's Save? What about the sunglasses inside?
That is so fucking, there's this shit that coaches have. We have a couple of things that we have, right? That we watch fight week. We're watching our guys. We're watching the enemies. We're watching everything. This is one of them. Matt's hit one of them. You never want to see your guy fucking feeling himself out of nowhere. The guy comes in and out every week. Hey, how you doing? Hey, sir, how you doing? Then fight week, all of a sudden, he's got fucking studded diamond earrings and sunglasses, and he's acting off. You're like, whoa, dude, you're throwing your mojo way off here, man. Don't be putting that energy out there. And so we always say, you know, just, I don't know what it is about sunglasses that make guys feel like maybe they're doing better. Figgy was wearing them too. So maybe Matt's on to something, but you don't want to see your guy trying to be something he's not, you know, and maybe Randy is that guy. I don't know him personally, but you don't want to see the hype building up. You want to see your athlete just relaxed in his natural state, you know, not worried about who's there, who's not there, being able to fight like they do in the gym. And I'll tell you what, I know that Matt doesn't let no fucking guys come in the gym with sunglasses on. I mean, when guys come in my gym with sunglasses on, I go, you're inside now. You know that, right? You're inside. And it's not the fighters. You could just be students even, you know? So
could it be to mask fear? Do you think guys do that because it's almost like it's a way of masking an emotion or something? Or do you think it's purely to look cool?
It's different.
I don't know.
Listen, I understand your point. If you're at a poker table, you don't want to see nothing. But it's not, I would say this, if there is guys with anxiety, it could help with any kind of anxiety. Whenever you have anxiety, you have sunglasses on, it could help with that. But I don't think that's it. I think it's guys just trying to be the fucking guy.
Look a certain way, yeah.
It's not that cool.
If you're that guy, if you're that fucking guy, like Conor, he's that fucking guy, right? Yeah. Like Conor McGregor, that's who he is. He was that way from day one. He's that way now. you just got to be true to whoever you are. Like if that's who the athlete is, that's who they are. But when you see a lot of changing, you could tell they're trying to find their mental bearings. That's never good, because like I said, for them to be efficient, you want them to be relaxed. And if they're mentally not relaxed, that's not a good sign. So it's interesting. Matt's always bringing up these little tidbits, but there's really a lot to them.
Matt, and Saif, who's the most relaxed guy you can think of that you've coached, that no matter what the situation, was just kind of even keeled?
I would probably say Jeff Neal. I mean, Jeff Neal, I mean, let me tell you something. I've never seen Jeff Neal get really mad in my whole life. And, you know, he's a guy that's dealt with adversity and had a lot of, you know, well-documented hardships. He's always even keel, man. And even when I'm on his ass about, you know, we've had moments where I'm pushing him to win, and he does. He never gets you know, he's just like, yes, sir. You could tell he's looking at me like he wants to punch me in the face. sometimes he does give me that look like I want to fucking hit you in the face. But that's when I know I'm getting to him. But he won't ever say anything. And that look is very, very rare. And I mean, he's really smooth operator. And, you know, I think that's dangerous, man. Guys like that, they're never too high, never too low, really, really calm. And they can find that themselves in those hard moments. And just one of those guys. And I mean, you know, John Jones and all these champions, they all have that distinction. So I think it's important for an athlete.
And also, the one fight we did not discuss on the main card is Justin Taffa.
Oh, Taffa, yeah.
Parker Porter, first round knockout.
Beautiful, beautiful slide back.
He knew he was done when he landed. He was done. He didn't have to follow.
The way that you know, Taffa is a big dude, and the way he just slid back and kept his eyes locked in and hit that left hand coming in that wide right, it was so well done. I mean, he saw that off the tape and off the film, and you could just tell that he game planned for it, and he just executed perfectly. So, you know, kudos to him, man.
I love when a guy, I think he came in at 266. I love when a guy comes in at 266. That's just,
it's like my brother-in-law, Edwin. Yeah. Yeah, it's like my brother-in-law. He's got to cut weight to make the heavyweight. And I did like seeing back to Jack Della and Madalena Randy Brown. I like seeing them afterwards on the social media. I saw them out there in a bar taking a shot. That's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice to, you know, break bread, have a drink with the guys you fought, you know. I remember like 100%. Yesterday doing that in Manchester when Ali Quinta fought Ross Pearson. I just remember being with all those English guys and we were doing shots. And
Ross is a cool dude. Ross has always been a real cool dude. Great guy, man.
Great fighter.
Great guy. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Well, Saif, I guess that this is it for us for the day, but thank you again. You're always so great, man. And come back whenever you want. We love having you on.
I love being on, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Anything you want to plug, Saif? Let's tell everybody where your school is, please.
No, we don't need to plug anybody.
No, we need you. What if I'm visiting and I'm like, I'm around that area and I'm like, oh shit, that's where he is. Where are you guys? Where is Fortis?
We are in Deep Ellum, Dallas, Texas, close to downtown. The gym is doing very, very well. And we're actually at capacity. We've been at capacity for a while. We are probably going to open another space, and we're kind of in between figuring out where we're going to do that. So things are good, man. And MMA just continues to grow at an unbelievable rate. It really does. I guess we made the right choice way back in the day when our parents told us, are you crazy? What are you going to do? Jiu-jitsu, Matt? Are you crazy, Matt? Mom, just watch. Mom, just give me a chance. Just let me show you, Mom.
I'm still happy that they made fighting a sport. And by the way, it changed my life. If I fighting and being silly, I made a career out of my only strengths.
Yeah.
Hey, Saif, I just remembered my sister-in-law just moved to Dallas. Her and her family. So I'm gonna when I visit, I'm gonna be coming down to hang out.
It's your home gym, baby.
I really will. I'd love to hang out with you, Jimmy.
Yes.
You're going to be at the Paramount in a couple of weeks. I'm going to see you.
It's almost sold out. Yeah, I got a notice for them. They said to just give one more push. It's almost sold. So March 4th, Paramount Theater. And then this Wednesday, I'll be at the Fat Black Pussycat doing an hour. And Matt, where can people come to see you if they want to train in Long Island?
Well, I mean, sarahbjj.com, Huntington, Long Island. But Jimmy, save a seat for me and the missus. We're coming to see you.
Yes, of course.
Okay, I'm going to be with my wife. No dirty humor.
No salty language, no.
Jimmy, I know you're sick. Saif, thanks so much, bro.
Good seeing you, buddy.
Take care, guys.
Bye, everyone. All right, so.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.